This is the Travel Writer Show on J-Air 88 FM in Melbourne. We continue to take a keen interest in the Russian invasion of Ukraine through our reporter Bridget Leslie in Sydney, who's maintained contact particularly with Ukrainian journalist Maria Pisarenko. Maria, who has remained in her hometown of Kyiv through all of the shelling, tells Bridget there is both good news and bad news on day 39 of the conflict.
You're standing in Old Town Kyiv. Again, looks very peaceful, but I know over the weekend a lot has gone on. What's happening on day 39?
Actually, to start from something positive, on day 39, it's April and we have snow today, which is kind of surprising, you know, but we are living in these strange times. So the snow is the last thing that can really shock or confuse people right now, because we're still at war. There have been positive news recently over this week. Just 2 days ago, the area around Kyiv, so Kyiv Oblast. Oblast is a part, the name of administrative division units in Ukraine, is now liberated from Russians. So all the area around the capital city is now free of Russians. And we are talking such hotspots which have been making headlines of world press, like Hostomel, Irpin, Bucha, Brovary. So all these smaller towns around Kyiv, suburban area of Kyiv, are free of Russians. They have been made to run away from these areas and move to the north. And we see that Russians did actually it pretty willingly, because they understand that they can't beat Ukrainians on this front. And now they're concentrating their troops on the southern and eastern fronts. Now we're talking Kharkiv, Mykolaiv, also Odessa, also Kherson. So the places where Ukrainian army is not as strongly defending, and they're moving there. So Kyiv now feels a little bit of ease, and really the situation in city is getting more close to what it used to be before war. People going around, more people in the streets, more cars in the streets. Some businesses are trying to open, like barber shops, grocery shops, even cafes, not restaurants yet, but more and more businesses are trying to really reopen. And I know a lot of people who are planning or are already heading back to Kyiv. It can be, you know, too kind of preemptive and too early to decide this, but people really do want to get back to normal life, though it can't be normal. War is still going on. Just we don't see and don't hear the explosions right now for several days. We have been having a full day, 24 hours without air sirens recently. So the recent 2 days were quiet, and that's really surprising. You know, it's also terrifying, because you understand that it could be quiet time before the storm. But right now, trying to live normal life.
Do you think a storm is coming, because Russia has pushed peace talks? Some say it's just a ploy to buy more time.
Probably it could be, because we see right now all the actions of Russians are done without any logic, so anything can happen, really. A lot of people I've been talking to recently, analysts and people who are monitoring closely the situation and have sources close to military, are saying that the possibility of a new strike at Kyiv in some time is still really high. So we can't say that Kyiv Oblast is liberated and we can, you know, breathe peacefully and think that everything is over. No, not even close. And also, I want to stress that what we see in these liberated cities is really, it's just leave you speechless, because these cities have been and towns liberated for 2 days already, and press tours, journalists are going there trying to film what the situation is there. So Irpin and Bucha are the main cities of the suburban area, and we have seen over these 2 days, and trending pictures on social medias are just looking like the scenes from the World War II movies, and even worse, it's just the streets with dead civilian bodies all over. A person who was riding the bicycle was shot, and the body just still lies on this bicycle, just in the street. We see people with their hands tied at their back, and with the marks of the bullets at their at the back of their heads. So Russians just executed people. In Bucha, a mass grave was found. So almost 300 civilian people were buried there. And these people were shot by Russians. Some of them were without clothes. Some of them had like the signs having been raped. We are talking about women. A lot of people with these tight hands, and also with the signs of tortures. And this is the army of the country, which pretends to be a normal country living in this world and asking everybody to count it and to listen to it. I'm talking Russia. So this just, you know, these images leave you speechless, because you could have never imagined to see this in European country, in the middle of Europe, these atrocities conducted by the other country, which has been living in the same world, in the world of 21st century, the world of international law, of some, supreme power of human ideas, you know, of humanity. And this is what we see right now. It's just terrifying. And I actually couldn't sleep this night, because all these images were kind of going through my head, and I just can't even imagine people who really have seen this with their own eyes, how stressful, terrifying, terrible it is for them. And that is the reality we are living right now. It's 20 kilometers from the place I'm staying right now.
And that's not far away at all.
Right.
When I read the news this morning, there were explosions in Odessa. Tell me about that real quick.
Yeah, right. So this is really the morning news. Not many details, because it's the 39th day of war, and everybody already knows that after the explosion occurs, or the strike of Russians occurs, you are not supposed to show the place. You're not supposed to name exact location. So here in Kyiv, we see the news only with these pictures of smoke above the sea and above the skyline of Odessa, with no exact information about what exactly was targeted. And just the news of recent half an hour, they have also, struck the city of Mykolaiv. And these were also airstrikes, seven of them. And also no exact information about what has been targeted, because it was like half an hour ago. And we see that clearly Russia is trying to change the tactics and to show full control of the southern part of Ukraine. So Odessa is the south of Ukraine. Mykolaiv is a little bit to the east from Odessa, but also southern east part of Ukraine. And this is what the fears are really great about, that Russians will focus on these southern and eastern regions of Ukraine. And the pictures we see in Mariupol, which has been destroyed by 90% by Russians, could also be repeated in other cities. And I send my prayers and hope that that won't be our reality, but Russians are really unpredictable and going against any logic or humanitarian values of the world.
You're a journalist, Maria. You've learned how to separate yourself from the story. This is different, because this is your country's story, your story. How are you dealing with reporting on the ground on what's going on in your part of the world?
Yeah, right. A really great point that I have been also discussing this with a lot of my colleagues recently. We're talking about this, so to say, yes, bias, patriotic bias, I would even call it, because it's a war in your country, and it's one of 100 chances or instances when you should be a part of this information war and fight for your country. And I really do. I really do share the values of impartial reporting, of journalism as it is. I was raised on these values, and my professional life is based on this. But right now I understand that it's war, and really you do have to take sides, and you have only one side to take. It's the side of your country. And right now you have to fight with words. You have to tell the truth and to stress, to put the right focuses and emphasis on what you are saying, because it's the war of also information and words. And we see how Russians are using this. Just the simple example, they call this special operation, not war. And this kind of number one example why words matter in this war, in every war, actually. So yes, really difficult to stay impartial. And I think that it's not even the time for journalists to stay impartial. And we also have debate about what foreign journalists do in Ukraine right now. A lot of them are right now staying in Lviv because it's the safest or more safe part of Ukraine right now, the western part. And the city is like a big newsroom. And Ukrainians are criticizing really foreign journalists for being too... it's not even impartiality, it's just a little bit of ignorance, because they are trying to show just immediately after the strikes that, oh, here is the location, the exact place, this exact place on this address, this and this street was targeted. Yes, facts matter. It's journalism, it's reporting. But when you say the exact address of the strike, which was kind of 5 minutes ago, you just help the occupier, you help these strikes to be, corrected. And this is what is also very important to note. Also, another situation I have to also talk about is the deaths of journalists. And I can't even see right now how many casualties among journalists have been during these 39 days of war. But I sure know about five deaths of journalists. And the recent news, the news of yesterday, where is it very honored and famous Ukrainian photographer Max Levin was found dead. His body was found dead in Kyiv Oblast. It's the place is called Huta Mezhegirska. It's to the north of Kyiv, the capital city. And I know he was missing for 2 weeks. And the military who came to our center told that 50% chance he's dead. And all the attempts to find him actually led to finding his dead body with, he was just shot by Russians. And this is really terrible. Russians do shoot children, they do shoot evacuation convoys, and they do shoot press. So that's why this war is strange, different, and inhumane in any given case.
What about the attack on the Russian oil depots? Any comment on that?
I could do the same way all the Ukrainian officials are doing right now, saying, oh, yeah, something has happened, but I haven't had the time to understand what is happening there. I think it's really a clever move of Ukraine, of Ukrainian government and military commanders, because we see that all the rules of war are being violated by Russia. And Russia is the one who attacked Ukraine. And Ukraine has all full rights to fight back and to defend itself. And these strikes, not going to talk more about, the nature of them and the dynamics and the mechanics of how it all happened. But here in Ukraine, it is seen as a very clever move, a good kind of tactic or even strategy of Ukraine to show that we won't keep silent, we won't sit and wait for the new bombing. And it's kind of an attempt to show the power and the strength, the force of the military. And this is the only force that Russia does understand. And I think that, yes, this could be seen as a turning point even in all the warfare tactics or strategy of Ukraine we have been seeing for these 39 days. And it was met with a lot of humor, sarcasm, and jokes online by Ukrainians. And everybody were like even celebrating this small victory, because this shows that Ukrainians are really powerful and they won't keep silent. They will fight back.
There's a rumor, Maria, that the Pope may visit Ukraine. We've got Easter coming up soon. Any truth to that?
You know, honestly, I didn't have even a chance to follow this news greatly, because yes, I've seen the headlines, no new exact details about this. We have seen the support from the Pope he showed in his speeches for the recent 39 days. And honestly, you just reminded me that there is Easter somewhere around the corner. And right now we kind of live in this vacuum of time with no days of the week, no holidays, no nothing, just continuous period of time, which started on the February 24th, February. And so we are still, you know, to get more information about the Pope arrival. And I think it will be a great sign and gesture of support if he comes, though the security situation is really a great concern for his security protocol.
If he came, though, would it even make a difference? The Russians don't seem to care about who comes and
right.
shows any signs of support.
Yes, it's, you know, Russians do not react to anything. They have their own stupid ideas and they just do whatever they want, violating every possible rule or unspoken rule. So the support of the Pope is more like, you know, to lift the spirits of Ukrainians, I guess, to show that all the civilized world is with us. And of course, it's not to show Putin something. It's just to show support. And it is really important right now at the times where when people, you know, now are feeling kind of a very upset. And I see this, you know, dynamic of the mood, of public opinion and morale. People are now really tired of everything. And these small signs from international community is what really matters right now. And it gives the feeling that we are not by ourselves, one-on-one with Russia. Of course, the Pope can't give us javelins or end-laws or stingers, but he can give, you know, a glimmer of hope and some not material one, but figurative, so to say, gesture of support. And that's also important in war.
Maria, thank you, and we'll be speaking again soon.
Thank you very much.
Since Bridget Leslie recorded that interview, there's been a massacre of Ukrainian civilians by Russia's army at Bucha, creating international headlines and suggestions that this may constitute a war crime.